have it, Diane.
Okay. Hello, my name is Diane, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Let's have a moment of silence, followed by a serenity prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
We would like to welcome you back to the 40s, how Alcoholics Anonymous worked in the 1940s. More than 50 years ago, after the publication of the Big Book, the recovery rate from alcoholism within the Fellowship of AA was 75%. AA's program, as practiced then, was quite different from the program that is practiced today. That is, the AA program is unchanged, but the way it is practiced has changed. To produce such an astounding recovery rate, what was done in the early days of AA? Well, this is what we are going to do. We are going to take an in-depth look at how Alcoholics Anonymous worked in the 1940s. We've asked someone to read the AA preamble as it appeared in the first edition of the Big Book in 1939.
We are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. Oh, my name's David. I'm an alcoholic. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect, or denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted.
Thank you, David. Class 3, taken from the original log of the USS Constitution. On August 23rd, 1779, she set sail from Boston with 475 officers and men, 49,600 gallons of fresh water, 7,400 cannon shot, 11,600 pounds of black powder, and 79,000 gallons of rum. Permission to harass and destroy English shipping was given, and she headed for Jamaica. Arriving in Jamaica on October 6th, she took on an 825 pounds of flour and 68,300 gallons of rum. 67 days. She sailed towards the Azores, arriving on November 12, 1779. She was loaded there with 550 pounds of beef and 54,300 gallons of Portuguese wine. On November 18th, she set sail for England. In the ensuing days, she defeated 5 British men of war and captured scuttled 12 English merchantmen, salvaging 70,000 gallons of rum. By January 27th, her powder and shot were exhausted. Unharmed, she made a night raid up the Firth of Clyde. Her landing party captured a whiskey distillery and transferred 40,000 gallons of whiskey aboard by dawn. Then, the USS Constitution arrived in Boston in February 1780. With no food, no cannon shot, no powder, no rum, no whiskey, no wine, and 48,000 gallons of stagnant water. Before we get into steps 6, 7, 8, and 9, the restitution phase, we are going to study and take a mock 4-step, a trial run of the 4-step. Please raise your hand if you need a copy of the 4-step packet. The 4th step is simple. All we are doing in this step, answering some questions, writing the answers down in an inventory fashion, reading some information from the Big Book, reaching a few conclusions, saying a few prayers, reconsidering our own personal positions on our resentments, fears, and our conduct over the years past, saving this inventory for future use, and doing all of this with the guidance of a sponsor following the directions from the Big Book.
The 4th step is not the 5th step. It is not a psychological exam or a graded test. It is not an endeavor to best yourself up by wallowing in the past or a step that requires a lot of time. It is not a perfect in every way a self-destructive venture, a pity party, nor it is an autobiography, a novel of your whole life story. The 4th step is a fact, finding spiritual search for the truth. That's all, nothing more, nothing less. Let's break this step down to an understandable basic layout.
Number one.
With the guidance of a sponsor, read the big book, page 63, last paragraph, up to and including page 71.
Number two.
Make several copies each of the inventory worksheets.
Number three.
Answer the questions in inventory fashion, vertically, one column at a time, following the instructions on the worksheet in accordance with the directions from the big book until complete.
Number four.
You are finished with the fourth step. Save it. Move on to the fifth step.
Let's take a look at those inventory worksheets and take a mock fourth step. Take out the sheet titled Resentments. Look for column one. Let's follow along as Dylan reads the first statement.
In dealing with resentments,
Fred.
In dealing with resentments, we set them down on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. Big book, page 64.
We will need to find out what people, institutions, or principles mean. In a brief and simple way, let's look at these three components that are used throughout the fourth step. People, any human being, etc. Institutions, any establishment, organization, facility, practice, system, incorporation, etc. Principles, any fundamental, original, ultimate, natural, and essential spiritual truth, law, theory, doctrine, rule, method, motivating force upon which others are based. You have been supplied with information pertaining to these definitions and also some lists of helpful terms. These sheets will help you in taking the fourth step.
And looking at column one, can you think of a person with whom you're angry? If so, write that name in the book. So all you do at this point in the process is to go back through your life and think of all the people who have made you resentful and put one name in each block. Then when you run out of blocks in column one, you start a new sheet and continue to fill it out. Repeat this until you're finished finding people in your past or present using column one only.
Then we moved on to institutions. We do exactly the same process that we just covered. Go back through your life and look for institutions with whom you are angry. Put this information in column one also. And finally, for column one, we do precisely the same thing with principles.
If this was a real fourth step, you would have a stack of inventory worksheets for resentments with column one filled to the max with names of people, titles of institution, and terms of principles. Keep in mind that we are going to have left over what we forgot to list. We will take care of them later in step 10. Don't wallow around wasting time.
Before we go any further, we need to explain this inventory process, one column at a time, vertically. No matter how intelligent or mentally coordinated we are, people simply do a more thorough, searching, less confusing, honest job when they keep it simple. The Big Book tells us on page 23, the main problem centers in his mind rather than his body. And if this is true, then we had better keep an open mind and try to follow some directions. Let's move on.
Column two, as in column one, is to be completed in the same manner. In an inventory fashion, vertically, one column at a time. In looking at column two, you can think of the reason why you were angry at the items in column one. Oh, can you think in column one? Again, as in column one, go back through your life and answer this question, a block at a time. Now in column three, the only thing we do differently is place a check mark in the appropriate block. Keep in mind that not every person, institution, or principal will relate to all the injuries across the board.
Let's continue to move forward into the solution. At the bottom left portion of this page, we're directed to number four, which reads, we went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Remembering that it's process, not perfection. Remember that it's progress, not perfection. And participation isn't anticipated. Next, we read and follow along from the big book, page 65, line 13, which is found on the next inventory worksheet. Resentments, page 2. What we are about to study is the precise information that we need to consider carefully.
Big Book 65, 66, 67, the problem is explained. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong were as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. Warning, but the more we fought and we tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. In war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that all life, which includes deep resentment, leads only to futility and unhappiness. Warning, to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile?
But with the alcoholic, whose hope is maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, the business of resentment. Sorry, here it looks like. Okay. The business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again.
Warning?
Yeah, that's you.
And with us, to drink is to die.
If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal man, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
The solution is given. We must accept and change our attitudes and rely on God.
We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look for it from an entirely different angle.
Remember, resentment is wrong judgment.
To see that the world and its people really dominated us, in that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol.
The action we must take and not take.
This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too.
Pray.
We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended us, we said to ourselves,
pray.
This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done.
Warning. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least the bottom line is,
resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick.
The fourth step promise, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically.
Resentment is wrong judgment or wrong judging on our part. Consider this, 90%, 95% of what put us here never happened. And if it did happen to us, it doesn't matter. What really matters is what we do with it and about while it is happening to us. And after it happens to us, what did we do? We got angry and resentful and stayed that way. Now in the next portion of the process, we will explore the exact nature of our wrong. This takes place in columns 4 and 5. Let's take a look.
Go to page 3. It reads Resentments Inventory. Page 3, Big Book, page 67. By using the information from columns 1, 2, and 3, we continued to move forward into the solution by answering, continued from page 1, columns 1 through 3, column number 4. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? In other words, after considering the information from columns 1, 2, and 3, and looking at this through the conclusion we have drawn by reading the pages from the Big Book, we should now have a different perspective, a clear understanding, and are armed with the facts of about our position. We should now agree with the following.
Somewhere along the line in life, we as alcoholics became warped. The things that were instructional, natural, and good to us became perverted somehow. We went through life with wrong judgments, wrong believing, and wrong actions. If people, institutions, or principles do not satisfy us, please us, meet our conditions and expectations, our agenda threatened us, intimidated, or hurt us. We punished them or acted without the role of the victim. We were afraid to appear that we had anything wrong with us, that we had any problems. We would find a good reason for why we were right and why people, institutions, and principles were wrong. Because we'd rather not be wrong, it's that simple. Let's move on. Begin with the top right of page 3, resentments.
Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person's involvement entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Go to column 4. Answer column 4 in an inventory fashion. When finished, move on to column 5. Where were we to blame? Our wrongs, our faults, our own mistakes.
By this time, you ought to have a real good understanding of how to do the fourth step inventory process. Let's continue and listen to this panel's mock example of the resentments worksheet in its entirety. Column 1, I'm resentful at people, Dad, Robert. Column 2, the cause. He wasn't around when I needed him. He had very little time or attention for me. Column 3 affects my security, ambition, personal relations, and pride. Column 4, where had I been? I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened in my attitudes, the way I treated, ways I avoided, and the ways I tried to get even with my father. He was wrong, I was right. Column 5, where was I to blame? I would come up with alibis, real or imagined, so I wouldn't spend time with him when he did try to do so with me. I blamed him for everything wrong in my life. I drank to oblivion and stayed resentful, and I never tried to work things out with him. Here is an example of the institutions. Column number 1, I'm resentful at institutions, Catholic school. Column 2, the cause. Too many rules and regulations. It was no fun. The teachers were unfair. The students made fun of me. Column 3, affects my self-esteem, security, ambitions, personal relations, and pride. Column 4, where had I been? I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened by my irresponsible, immature, and defiant attitudes and actions. I treated fellow students, teachers, assignments, rules, and regulations with total disregard and adversity. Column number 5, where was I to blame? I wasted time, resources, and I took everything for granted. I lived by my own agenda. I was lazy, I drank at school, and abused, manipulated, and broke the rules on purpose. I was a professional victim and victimizer.
Here is an example of principles. Column 1, I am resentful at principles, competition. Column 2, the cause. I was never good enough. I was always embarrassing and too challenging. I feared confrontation and exposure. I hated to lose. Column 3 affects my pocketbook, self-esteem, security, ambitions, personal relations, pride. Column 4, where had I been? I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened by being passive and aggressive. I lived the role of a victim or a victimizer. My agendas, wants, and desires were based on ignorance and contempt. I lived a fear-based life serving only one thing, me. Column 5, where was I to blame? I would lie and cheat so I could win. I would either run and hide or stay and fight. I'd never compromise. I was full of fear. I was always talking the talk, but never walking the walk. I anticipated and hardly ever participated. I was two-faced, an actor. I drank over it to escape and or to deal with it.
Let's move on to fears. Keep in mind that this meeting is not a question and answer forum. If you do have some questions, write them down and submit them to your sponsor. Go to Fear Inventory, page 4. The Big Book simplifies everything when it comes to our fears. See if you can draw some conclusions about your position on fears as we read.
Fear, Big Book, pages 67 and 68.
This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
The directions for the fear inventory.
We revered our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them.
The action we must take and not take. The solution is given. Accept and change our attitudes and rely upon God.
Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem, or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so.
The bottom line is fear is wrong believing. Let's continue if we have taken steps 1, 2, and 3.
For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying on God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent we do as we think He would have us. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity.
Warning.
We never apologize for anyone for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do.
Pray.
We ask Him to remove our fears and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
The kind of fears that the four-step inventory process deals with are a specific kind of fear. All human beings have fear, instructive fears that we are all born with. These fears are reasonable. They motivate us and protect us. The fears, the kind of fears that we are taught and instill with, homegrown fears, they are lies that we tell ourselves and or have been told, and also the denial of the truth, the definite wrong believing that is designed to destroy and or kill us. So basically, we need to look at the wrong believing and the lies and denials that we have been living with and through our alcoholic careers and lives. Here are some examples of the kind of affairs that we're talking about.
whether it be a person, institution, or principles, have you ever made statements or perhaps had these kinds of conversations with yourselves? What are they going to do with me? What's going to happen if I do that? Poor me. Why me? I can't. I'll never make it. I'd never survive that. I'm no good, a loser. I'll show you a thing or two. That's beneath me. I refuse to do it. What if I lose my job? How would I ever make it? Fear is cunning, baffling, and powerful. We must review them and get them on paper and honestly face them. Let's go to page number 2, column number 1, and answer the statement, we reviewed our fears thoroughly.
Go back through your life and think of any people, institutions, or principles that you fear. Put those items in column number 1. And in column 2, answer accordingly the question why we have them. One column at a time, one item at a time, vertically, until columns number 1 and 2 are completed. Listen as we read from our mock examples of the Fears Inventory worksheet.
Fears Inventory, page 67 and 68, page 2. Column number 1, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. People, childhood bully, Danny Diamond. Column number 2, we asked ourselves why we had them. What will he do to me if he catches me? What will everyone think and say about me if he beats me up? I'm a coward, a weakling, and no good. I'll never survive this. Column number 1, institutions, prison. Column number 2, what would happen to me there? Will they beat me? Rape me? What else? What about all the other things people tell you about? I'd never make it. I'd die there for sure. Column number 1, principles, the 10 commandments. Column number 2, I'll go to hell for all eternity if I break them in sin. I'll be punished and I have to live the rest of my life living in hell. I'm a bad person and God will hate me if I break them. I must be perfect or else.
Fear is silly. It is in our heads. It's wrong believing. It's believing a lie. It's denying the truth. It is relying on self rather than relying on God. Prayer, be prayed. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Our troubles, we think, are our own making. Selfishness, self-centeredness that we think is the root of our own troubles. We can now see how ridiculous our alcoholic fears are and have been. Fear is simple. Alcoholics are complicated.
There are many kinds of harms done that have occurred over the years past. Sex is one of them. It is singled out because it is instinctual, controversial, and above all else, it is common ground for all alcoholics, all human beings. The whole point is told to us by the Big Book when it comes to our own conduct over the years past. It tells us, in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. Without any harmful conduct, we apply the solution from the pages of the Big Book. Let's move on to page 6, Sex Inventory. The problem is explained. The bottom line, now sex. Many of us need an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a bare necessity of procreation. Then we have voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be humans if we didn't. What can we do about them?
The directions are given.
We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where we have been selfish? Where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got all this down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not?
The solution is given. Prayer. We must change our attitudes and our conducts and our actions.
We ask God to mold our ideals and to help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
Warning.
Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, providing that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem.
Prayer.
In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it.
Warning.
God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
Warning.
Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so. But this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives.
Prayer.
If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we have learned our lesson.
Warning. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are the facts of our experience. To sum up about sex, prayer.
We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing.
The cure-all.
If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, and when to yield would mean heartache.
Let's move on to page number two. No, let's move on to the next page, number two, Big Book, page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. We got all this down on paper and looked at it.
Again, keeping in line with the directions, we answered one column at a time, vertically thinking of people, institution, and principles. In an inventory fashion, we considered column number one. It asked. Column number one, what have we been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? Family, back to marriage. Column number two, who have we hurt? Mom, Dorothy, manager, Bill, wife, Dan. Number three, did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Yes, suspicion and bitterness. Yes, bitterness. Yes, all of the above. Column number four, where were we at fault? I stole or forged checks equal to $250, lied about it, and never paid it back. Jeopardized his job by manipulating our friendship to get cash advances on credit card. I lied. Ruined the marriage, lied, stole $1,000, cheated, led her on, used her, abused our friendship, and drank throughout. Number five, what should we have then done instead? Paid my own debts, consequences, sober, responsible son, pay back the $250 and apologize. Use card responsibly, apologize, and respect the friendship. Stayed sober, no marriage, just friends. Apologize and pay back $1,000.
Consider this equation to step four. An alcoholic minus the alcohol equals an IC. IC is described as being what we alcoholics are left with when we get to step four, which is that we are abstinent, but still, according to the big book throughout, unmanageable, powerless, insane, beyond human aid, obsessive, vain, abnormal, bodily and mentally different, illusional, delusional, and many other things. The whole problem comes down to this. In step four, we did and probably still have wrong judgment, wrong believing, and wrong actions. Until we take ourselves through the rest of the 12 steps, we are simply living with untreated alcoholism and will try the old game again.
We should now have an understanding of who, what, when, where, how, and why of the fourth step and its directions from the big book. A definite and valuable example of the inventory process. If you're still confused or perhaps just not sure, keep coming back. Remember, it's not important that you feel great or totally great step four in order to complete it. Take a risk and see what happens. We learn by doing, not by feeling. And hopefully you will be amazed before you're halfway through. It's quantity, not quality. It's quality, not quantity. Progress, not perfection. We must be vigorous, honest, and we become vigorous Marcus.
We have been thorough about our personal inventory. We have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
Next week, we'll move on to 6, 7, 8, and 9. Before we close this meeting, let's keep in line with the early AAs. Stand in place, do not hold hands, bow your heads, and we'll say the Lord's Prayer, and at the end of the prayer, after the word, Amen.